Television actor Jussie Smollett has been released on bond after posting $100,000 bail for allegedly paying two men $3,500 to stage a racially motivated attack on him last month. AP's Ed Donahue has the details.
Empire is filmed in Chicago. Assistant State's Attorney Risa Lanier says specific instructions were given to two brothers.
Defendant Smollett also included that he wanted Ola to place a rope around his neck, pour gasoline on him, and yell, "This is MAGA country."
Lanier says Smollett misled people into thinking the attackers were white.
This investigation shifted from a hate crime to disorderly conduct.
Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson says Smollett was upset with his salary.
Why would anyone, especially an African-American man, use the symbolism of a noose to make false accusations?
Jussie Smollett's attorneys say the allegations are outrageous, inconsistent with his character. I'm Ed Donahue.
A federal judge has tightened a gag order against President Trump's former political advisor, Roger Stone.
U.S. District Judge Amy Berman Jackson told Roger Stone he would pose a danger to others in his criminal case unless she modified the terms of his bond release and included a gag order. Stone took the witness stand trying to explain why he posted a photo of her with an image that appeared to be crosshairs near her head. He tried to apologize, but the judge said the apology rings quite hollow.
That's AP's Jackie Quinn reporting. Top U.S. and Chinese trade negotiators haggled Thursday over the details of a set of agreements aimed at ending their trade war, just 1 week before a Washington-imposed deadline for a deal expires and triggers higher U.S. tariffs. Reuters reported exclusively Wednesday that the two sides are starting to sketch out an agreement and structural issues, drafting language for six memorandums of understanding of proposed Chinese reforms. This is VOA News. A U.S. Coast Guard officer has been ordered, held without bail, on drug and gun charges while prosecutors gather evidence to support more serious charges involving what they portrayed as a domestic terror plot. Lieutenant Christopher Paul Hessen was arrested last week. Police found several weapons, steroids, and several thousand rounds of ammunition in his apartment. United States Attorney Robert Herr says Hessen remains innocent until proven guilty.
At this point, none of the charges that Mr. Hessen is facing have been proven beyond a reasonable doubt. And in our system of justice, of course, that means that Mr. Hessen is innocent right now of the charges that he is facing.
Federal prosecutors said Hessen compiled what appeared to be a computer spreadsheet hit list that included House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer, as well as prominent political candidates and media members. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro has closed the border with Brazil and said he would consider closing the country's border with Colombia. Maduro made that announcement in a televised interview shortly after a caravan of Venezuelan opposition leaders led by National Assembly President Juan Guaido departed for the Venezuela-Colombia border to receive humanitarian aid for needy citizens. Maduro said the aid is an attempt to overthrow his government.
El objetivo de todos, hermanos militares, es una guerra.
He said the goal of everything, military brothers, is a psychological war of attrition or of demoralization to defeat, annul the work, the will of the Bolivarian National Armed Force and the Venezuelan people to fight. This is the goal of a psychological war. Guaido declared himself interim president in late January and is recognized by the United States and dozens of other countries as Venezuela's legitimate head of state. The opposition intends to deliver tons of U.S.-supplied food and medicine by land and sea Saturday that is warehoused in the Colombian border city, despite Maduro's order to the military to disrupt their plans. Pope Francis opened a landmark Vatican conference on the sexual abuse of children by priests. Gracie Jerome reports.
It's a global scandal that's rocked the Catholic Church. And while his predecessors have been accused of failing to properly address it, Pope Francis says the Church must take steps to protect its most vulnerable members.
Ascoltiamo il grido dei piccoli.
We hear the cry of the little ones who ask for justice. The holy people of God look at us and expect from us not simple and obvious condemnations, but concrete and effective measures.
The Pope's gathered nearly 200 church leaders, Vatican officials and experts, bringing the extent of the abuse to the forefront of church policy after decades of cover-ups.
And that is Reuters' Gracie Jerome reporting. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbatha in Washington. Today is Friday, February 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigerians go to the polls tomorrow to elect a president, but is the Elections Commission ready this time around?
We are ready for the election. The problems we encountered last week have been solved substantially. All the materials have been delivered to all the states of the Federation and the Federal Capital Territory.
Rotimi Oyakeme is the Chief Press Secretary to Nigeria's Elections Commission Chairman, Mahmoud Yakubu. Burundi has threatened to pull its troops out of the African Union peacekeeping mission in Somalia. South Sudan warring parties pledged never to recruit children. And four Liberian opposition parties signed a memorandum of understanding towards collaboration.
Above all, that political collaboration is not only possible, but also necessary and crucial to the development of our democracy.
Benoni Ure is the chair and former presidential candidate of the opposition All Liberia Party. And today, February 22nd, is Nile River Day. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Independent Electoral Commission of Nigeria, INEC, says it is ready to deliver a free and fair presidential and legislative elections tomorrow, Saturday. The reassurance comes as some Nigerians say they are skeptical about the commission's readiness, particularly since it abruptly postponed the February 16 vote 5 hours before voters were to go to the polls. But Rotimi Oyakemi, Chief Press Secretary to Elections Commission Chairman Mahmoud Yakubu, says the commission has resolved most of the problems that led to the postponement of the February 16 vote.
We are ready for the election. The problems we encountered last week have been solved substantially. All the materials have been delivered to all the states of the Federation and the Federal Capital Territory, and already the materials have been deployed to the local government areas. The smart card readers that we are using, over 180,000 of them, have all been reconfigured, because when we postponed the election from last Saturday to next Saturday, they had to be reconfigured, because initially the smart card readers are supposed to work on February the 16th from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. But because we shifted the election, they had to be reconfigured to now function on Saturday at about the same time. So we have completed the reconfiguration of the smart card readers. So we are good to go.
So, Rotimi, what do you say to the ordinary Nigerian who may be wondering now about the possibility of another delay? What do you say to that person?
Well, I think that Nigerians are wonderful people. They have been quite understanding. We have apologized for what happened last Saturday. They took responsibility, and the chairman of INEC, Professor Mahmoud Yakubu, personally apologized to Nigerians and regretted the inconveniences caused businesses, individuals, and so many other people all over the country. We have told them that if they check our records, since 2015, when this present commission came on board, we have conducted 195 different types of elections, and the outcomes have been quite good. The era of landslide victory is gone. Now, victories are won neck to neck. The difference between the eventual winner and the runner-up is very small. So every vote counts. So now Nigerians know that their vote counts. There is no opportunity for rigging. So I think Nigerians should be rest assured that their votes will count, and we really want them to exercise their franchise on Saturday.
How many voter cards have you collected? Because there are some people who are saying that millions of Nigerians that register to vote have not collected their voter cards. How many cards have you collected?
We have quite a number of cards that are yet to be collected. I think about over 10 million that have not been collected, but about 86% of the cards have been collected. We have, in total, over 84 million registered voters, and over 86% of that figure have collected their PVCs. And of course, PVCs are essential for you to be able to vote. Every voter must come with a permanent voter's card, because they are going to use the smart card readers and do not have the PVC in order to be able to vote and go through the accreditation and authentication processes. that we are going to carry out before voting starts on Saturday.
Rotimi Oyakemi is the Chief Press Secretary to Nigeria's Independent National Electoral Commission Chairman, Makmu Yakubu. He was speaking with us from the capital, Abuja. In Liberia, four former presidential candidates in the country's 2017 election have signed a memorandum of understanding to speak with one voice as opposition during the presidency of George Weah. The opposition leaders include former Vice President Joseph Boakai of the Unity Party, Charles Bramskin of Liberty Party, Alexander Cummings of the Alternative National Congress, and Benoni Ure of the All Liberia Party. The opposition leaders committed themselves to fostering a non-violent posture towards the Weah government. As Moses Gaziewu reports from Monrovia, the opposition leaders said they will make recommendations to the Weah government that would promote national growth and development.
It was an amazing occasion marked by fun and bundles of speeches from supporters of the Unity Party, Liberty Party, Alternative National Congress Party, and the All Liberian Party. Several legislators from both the Senate and the House of Representatives were on hand to grace an occasion that amassed an interesting but surprising turnout. The current standard bearer of the Liberty Party, Yomli Lawrence, said these former presidential contenders were there to sign a particular document.
I'm excited about the decision that is about to be made today by our four former and present standard bearers to join them from make themselves to supporting this process. We will work with honesty, sincerity, and with love in our hearts for Liberia, our country. It's time to put our differences aside and work together.
Their joint statement of commitment was read by Benin Ayure, former standard bearer and former presidential candidate of the opposition All Liberian Party.
Above all, that political collaboration is not only possible, but also necessary and crucial to the development of our democracy.
Meanwhile, the political leaders, who included former Vice President Joseph Boakai, Charles Bromskin, and Alexander Cummings, said that collaborations was intended to support a smooth governance process in Liberia.
We have chosen to restore hope to the hopeless, to strengthen the weak, to encourage the disconsolate, and to reassure Liberia's international partners that we value Liberia and Liberia far above individual ambitions. We have just demonstrated this commitment by reaffirming
a partisan crowd made of supporters from all four opposition parties stormed the headquarters of the Unity Party for the ceremony, which they said marks a new beginning for opposition collaboration. Some of the partisans said they were delighted by this renewed effort towards opposition collaboration in Liberia.
My name is Dagundi Sewe. From the comments of the opposition leaders, I think they mean business. And this time, they have decided to unify in the interest of the country. So I think it's a good initiative.
I'm Jonathan Taya Dolake, and we think about that will reduce the option for our Liberian people. It will also strengthen the individual's political party and consolidate the efforts that we are making at different fronts.
If the renewed effort by the opposition to collaborate becomes a reality, it could pose a formidable challenge to the government of President George Weah. The opposition leaders said their actions will be peaceful. But this is not the first time towards opposition unity or collaboration in Liberia. Too often, their efforts have fallen apart, especially during a presidential elections, perhaps due to unwillingness on the part of some to support a consensus candidate. Moses Gaziewu, VOA News, Monrovia.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, February 22nd, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. Burundi is threatening to withdraw all of its troops from the African Union peacekeeping mission in Somalia, also known as AMISOM, if the African Union does not reverse its decision. The African Union Peace and Security Council took a decision to withdraw withdraw 1,000 Burundian troops from Somalia before the 28th of February as part of a transitional program for Somali forces to assume their own security responsibility. Moses Javier Rimana reports from Bujumbura.
While addressing the parliament in Bujumbura, Burundi's defense minister Emmanuel Nahomvukiye said that his country will withdraw all its soldiers from the African Union mission to Somalia, AMISOM, if the Peace and Security Council do not reconsider the decision of withdrawing the 1,000 all Burundian troops. He says that instead of planning to pull out only 1,000 troops from the AMISOM, now the African Union should prepare the withdrawal of all Burundian troops. Burundi Defense Minister said that his country will not accept its soldiers to perish in Somalia as they operate in danger zones, and that 1,000 is a huge number which exposes them more. Burundi had the second largest contingent in AMISOM with 5,432 troops after Uganda, and the second to deploy troops in Somalia, with its first soldiers having arrived in Mogadishu in December 2007. The UN adopted a resolution to gradually downsize the number of AMISOM personnel in order for the Somali security forces to assume fully responsibility for security. Burundi argues that the decision should affect all troops contributing countries and not only one country. Alain Guillaume Bunyoni is the Burundi Public Security Minister. He says that laws should be respected, and if not, then the government is standing for the country's interest, and that they rather stay in Burundi rather than getting problems in foreign countries. Mr. Bunyoni said that Burundi went to bring peace and stability in Somalia and was never there for money, as money can't buy lost lives. Earlier this week, Somalia President Mohamed Farmajo made a two-day visit to Burundi, meeting President Pierre Nkurunziza to discuss security-related issues in the two countries. The two presidents called for an urgent summit of the AMISOM troop-contributing countries to discuss the decision made by the African Union Peace and Security Council. Pascal Nyabenda is the speaker of the Burundi Parliament. He says that this is something that the government should take seriously, since there will be a huge reduction in number of troops at a very short time. He said that the government should make sure that the troops in Somalia don't get into trouble, as the Al-Shabaab seems to be carrying out attacks recently. At least 200 troops arrived in Bujumbura from Somalia yesterday as part of the gradual and phased reduction of AMISOM, which was created by the African Union Peace and Security Council in 2007. Now, Burundi Parliament released a communique calling for the new chairman of the African Union to convene a summit of the AMISOM troop contributing countries to address what Burundi calls injustice. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
South Sudan's warring parties, including the South Sudan People's Defense Force, the SPLAIO, and the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, say they are committed to protecting children during armed conflict. The country representative of the UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, in South Sudan says the commitment is a good gesture, but he said armed groups must prove that they are no longer recruiting children into their forces. Dimo Silva Aurelio has the story from Juba.
Division commanders from the army, the SPLA in opposition, and the opposition alliance have been meeting in Juba for the past 3 days to draft a joint action plan aimed at ending what the United Nations calls grave violations against children. Lieutenant General Frank Musho Kamansi, the army's force commander in Juba, took part in drafting the plan.
According to the report by the United Nations Secretary General, grave violations have been committed against children by armed actors in South Sudan, where both state and non-state actors have been listed by the UN Secretary General for consistently perpetrating 5 of the 6 grave violations against children.
UNICEF says nearly 3,000 children were released from the ranks of opposition groups in Pibor and Yambio between 2015 and 2018. Amando Paz, the UNICEF country representative for South Sudan, says armed actors in South Sudan must prove to the world they are no longer going to use children in armed conflict.
By addressing all 6 grave violations affecting children in armed conflict, this action plan will be more comprehensive and stronger than those produced in the past.
Bass says South Sudan can draw lessons learned from countries like Sudan, Chad and the DRC Congo, all of which have been delisted from the UN Secretary General's list of countries that commit the six grave violations against children. Joseph Bangasi Bokasoro is a member of the South Sudan Opposition Alliance.
I'm grateful that as the stakeholders of this country, it is important to realize and recognize that our country has been insulted. We have insulted ourselves. We have committed crimes. We have committed mistakes using violence against children, using violence against humanitarian agencies. Today, let us all recognize this and accept the fact and turn that dark history back to move South Sudan forward.
SPLAIO Deputy Military Spokesman Colonel Lampol Gabriel, who represented his group at the meeting, would not disclose how many child soldiers are in the ranks of the SPLAIO, but says as rebel forces assemble in cantonment sites, they will be screened, and if children are found to be in their ranks, they will be released and reintegrated into their communities.
We would like to assure the international community that in the same spirit we signed the revitalized peace agreement in September 2018. We come here today to work together to stop the violations against our children.
South Sudan's Defense Minister Kwol Manyang Juk admits the South Sudan Army has recruited children in the past.
There's no doubt that children suffered during the armed struggle and continue to suffer during the current conflict. And we hope that with the current peace that we've just signed, the people of South Sudan and our children in particular will have a better future.
The action plan launched today is expected to guide military field commanders during their training. The plan orders commanders and their forces not to recruit, maim or kill children. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Today, February 22nd, is Nile River Day, which is celebrated each year in recognition of the contributions of Africa's longest river to socio-economic development. The day also serves to raise awareness about protecting the river on which millions of people depend for food, transport, power, and water for irrigation. Dr. Abdul Karim Say is the Deputy Executive Director of the Nile Basin Initiative, an intergovernmental partnership of 10 Nile Basin countries.
If you are dealing with transboundary water resources, then by nature, transboundary means this river crosses at least one international border. So you cannot sustainably develop this resource and utilize this resource sustainably without the cooperation. And that cooperation platform is the Nile Basin Initiative.
What would you say are the main threats to the river's health? Would you say it's climate change? Would you say it's pollution? Would you say it's siltation? Or would you say it's human interference?
The ones you mentioned, all of them are relevant. Climate change, yes. We do a lot of climate change modeling as well to estimate how the hydrology of the river and the river system. When I say the river, it's not only the main stem of the Nile. I also mean the entire basin, actually, basically. All the tributaries of the Nile are going to be affected. This is one. Another one very important point is, yes, the land degradation. A lot of sediment coming to the rivers, pollution from urban areas especially, and increasing conversion of wetlands, for example. And more importantly also, when you have transboundary rivers like the Nile, you need to be able to see across the countries. Because if you plan within only one country, then you'll not be able to see how you'll be affected by what's happening upstream. Meaning affected means because the river is being affected, and how you are going to affect also those who are in the downstream country. That is why in a transboundary river basin, you need transboundary institutions to see those challenges across and to find solutions for those challenges.
Talking about the use of the water, there have been conflicts over the use of the River Nile water. For example, the recent one being Egypt contesting the construction of the Renaissance Dam in Ethiopia. How does NBI come in to help diffuse such tensions?
Okay, maybe what I would talk is more about thematically, how does NBI help countries to develop the resource more sustainably, in a more optimal manner? So one of the problems really is, as I've said earlier, you are dealing with the transboundary river basin. So what you do in some part of the basin can affect those uses in another part of the basin. Having a basin-wide understanding of the river system is important. So,
Dr. Abdul Karim Seh is the Deputy Executive Director of the Nile Basin Initiative. He spoke with reporter Mugumi Davis Rakarinji from Kigali, Rwanda. It's time now for Daybreak Africa's portion. Here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the draws for the FIFA Under-20 World Cup, where Mali, Senegal, South Africa and Nigeria will know their group's opponent in the 22nd edition of the FIFA Under-20 World Cup to be held in Poland on Sunday. The 24 teams will be drawn into six groups of four teams, with the host Poland automatically seeded to pot one and placed into the first position of Group A. We stay with football, as Egypt has chosen six venues across five cities to host this year's Africa Nations Cup finals, which will include the Port Said Stadium, where 72 supporters died in the country's worst violence at a soccer venue in 2012, after a board meeting, the Egyptian Football Association confirmed that Cairo Stadium, Borg Arab Stadium in Alexandria, and Ismailia Stadium are among the venues chosen for the tournament. Other venues are the army-owned June 30 Stadium on the outskirts of Cairo and the Suez Stadium. And now to athletics news. World champion in the 800 meters, Caster Semenya, says she's not aware of the reported $1.7 million funding by South African government towards her legal fees, as he squares up with the IAAF at the Court of Arbitration for Sports in Zurich. Semenya is challenging an IAAF proposed rule change that aims to restrict the levels of testosterone in female athletes. Caster Semenya released a statement through her legal representatives where she denied that she had received $1.7 million towards her legal bill, as reported in the media this week. In the meantime, the IAAF has come under fire, with increasing pressure on the athletics body to drop the proposed plans, but its president, Sebastian Coe, has defended the move.
The core value for the IAAF is the empowerment of girls and women through athletics. The regulations that we are introducing are there to protect the sanctity of fair and open competition, and that's really what we're here to defend.
We're still with athletics, as Athletics Kenya will hold a meeting with athletes' representatives, where a total of 48 managers are expected at a meeting on Friday. The agenda for the meeting, held once every 2 years, features athletes' contracts, anti-doping matters, and Athletics Kenya's calendar of events for 2019, among other issues. Athletics Kenya President Jack Tuwei says they will also explore how the agents and managers handle athletes when they are not competing in national events.
We want to educate in terms of things to do with anti-doping, because we all want to make sure that our sport is clean, our country is clean, and our athletes go and run and win clean.
And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that is it for this Friday, February 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. Join us again Monday for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Shryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
It's been a long week. You worked hard. Probably need a break. I can help you with that. I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. This weekend, tune in and relax, energize, connect with great music and people from across the African continent. This Sunday's 55-minute program features gorgeous Pan-African music from 9 different countries. Song of the Week, Muscatella, stirs up tasty Ghanaian and Calypso flavors you're gonna love. And last but not least, my feature interview with marimba band Rio Mira will get you in tune with your Afro-Pacific brothers and sisters. So come on, people. Peepsters, join me this Sunday at 1505 and 20500 UTC.